Thank you for the introduction, David, and morning, everybody. It's a great pleasure to come and talk at the Linnaean Society and kick this meeting off. I'm Richard Gregory from the Centre for Conservation Science at the RSPB and associated with UCL. By way of an introduction today, I want to say something about the state of nature, what we know about biodiversity, the sample that we have, and by way of doing that, to indicate in terms of taxonomy primarily that the gaps in our information, what we know and what we don't know. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors here, particularly Fiona Burns, who some of you will know, who is one of the people driving the analyses in the background, and the State of Nature Partnership, of which many of you are contribute to. So the State of Nature report in 2016 aimed to provide this comprehensive authoritative statement on the state of nature using the very best information from the expertise, the specialists right across the country, from all the relevant organisations. It did that in order to provide a statement about how the environment was changing, to promote the organisations, the research agendas and the monitoring of those programmes and those institutions, and also to provide the best information for decision makers, policy makers who are related to the environment. So when we want an authoritative statement, in terms of biology and sampling, ecology, we need a representative sample with low bias. And bias can be in terms of abundance and rarity, taxonomy, space, time, all kinds of bias. And I'll talk about some of that today by way of introduction to today's meeting. So the State of Nature report reflects a collaboration of over 50 different organisations involved in conservation and research work in the United Kingdom. Here's a long list of them here in these logos you can see, and we worked very, very closely and very productively with the government agencies, the statutory agencies in each of the countries, with JNCC and Natural England, and their support is very much appreciated for much of the monitoring that we talk about here. In terms of data sources, many of you will be familiar with the different kind of survey biological information available in the UK. There are the structured schemes, the breeding bird surveys, the butterfly monitoring schemes, bat conservation, Rothamsted, the online atlases, the plant change index that were available from Atlas work, the biological records that are becoming more and more useful in terms of how analysis is developing, countryside survey, and a whole range of sources of information in terms of marine data. And today, given the time available to me, and what I know most, I'm going to tell you something about the terrestrial and freshwater systems. So much of that data, of course, is based upon the expertise of volunteers, dedicated and highly skilled volunteers providing data collection, working with teams, often much smaller teams of professionals, in order to deliver survey information, biological information of a high quality in both kind of structured and unstructured surveys. If we think about the species, the freshwater terrestrial species in the UK, they're around something like 55,000 species in the UK. And my assessment will just look at the species there. So if we look at the information available to the State of Nature report back in 2016, that's the blue area here, we were able to assemble information using our fantastic partnership and the expertise on around 4,000 species where we had information on population change. And we were able to collate information from modern red lists on nearly 8,000 species to give us an assessment of the state of UK's biodiversity. So that's kind of 7% of the species and 15% of the species. There were probably 10,000 species in the sample, individual species in this sample, if you consider overlap. So it's a decent sample within the UK biodiversity. But how representative is that to allow us to generalise? And what gaps exist? So the blue area is the known knowns, and then you have the known unknowns. And it's the unknowns that we're talking about mostly here. So in this talk, I wanted to say something about the state of nature, how it's changing, what we know about it, from the best available information and analysis. I want to talk about taxonomic representation, because that's a really critical issue here in terms of the role of specialists. And I wanted to look at kind of conclusions and forward look, because I think there's lots and lots of positive things we can say. It's a very exciting moment in terms of technology, analysis, and so on and so forth. So the state of nature was primarily using three different metrics of change. Two metrics of change in population. So those changes, the metrics we're using were categorical change in species. We're able to assemble information on categorical change of a robust nature in abundance or occupancy for around 4,000 species. Temporal change, so temporal change is where we have indices of population or occurrence through time. We're able to assemble population temporal change information about 2,500 species. And then we're able to pull together the modern red lists to assess extinction risk of species for a much bigger sample of species, over 8,000 species. And as we speak, more and more red lists are being carried out and are being published. A new red list for birds in the United Kingdom was published on Friday. So as we talk, information is becoming more available. To be clear on the actual pattern of trend we found, this will be familiar to many of you, but what we did for this big sample, 4,000 species, was to categorise species trend into classes, categorical classes of decline and increase. And overall, we found, if you just look at the pattern of change from zero change, positive, negative, 56% of species, these UK species, had declined in the long term, so over the last 30, 40 years. And within that category, 40% had declined strongly or moderately in our categorisation. That means, of course, that 44% of species had increased, and the proportion of species increasing moderately or strongly was 29%. So there's a pattern of decline in biodiversity overall, but there's also increase and change. It's a dynamic system that we're looking at. In terms of the short term and the long term, those long term trends go like 40 years back. We can also look at the most recent period, the last decade really, and say what's the change in biodiversity over that time period. And the change is kind of a more balanced picture, 53% of species declining, 47% of species increasing. There's a slight hint there that the rate of decline in UK biodiversity is changing, perhaps slowing. And if we look by broad taxonomic group, you can see here, these are major groups that we've pulled out, the vertebrates, plants and lichens, and the invertebrates. You can see a pattern where a higher proportion of invertebrates appear to be declining in our data. And no matter which data sets we look at, that seems to be quite a common pattern that we find. But the question is, to what degree does that give us a representative coverage, a representative sample of taxa within the UK? So this graphic shows you at the top the breakdown of the major kingdoms of all those UK species I talked to you about, the 55,000 species, animals, fungi, plants, chromists. And then you can see the coverage of species. This is only, it's a very crude level of doing this, just looking at the species by kingdom. You can see the breakdown within our sample. So you can see in this example, animals are actually quite well represented in terms of species number, the fungi much less so, and the plants very much kind of overrepresented in our sample. So in a crude way, in the slides I'll show you, I've sort of talked about medium, low, and high bias and the different major types of data. So I've described that as kind of medium bias. If we look at the animals within that sample, the animals actually quite well, in our sample, quite well represent the actual major groups within the animal kingdom. So you can see the arthropods are pretty well represented in our sample from the species available. The chordata, as you might expect, and a whole group of other species that are less well, the more obscure species groups and taxa are less well recorded, and I think people talk about that today. And of course, this doesn't mean that arthropods are per se well represented, because there are many phyla and taxa within the arthropods that are really poorly represented, and others much more well overrepresented. If we look at the plants, there we see a picture of much greater bias overall at this level of taxonomy. So the flowering plants dominate in our sample, as you might think, and the mosses, the algae and other groups are much less well represented. So the plant data within this overall measure is less well represented. As I said, our other main metric of change was the population index. So here we were able to pull together a composite indicator of population change based upon modelling of occupancy and abundance data through time. So this gives you this like a living planet type index for the UK. That's exactly what this is really, with confidence limits here. And you can see this overall pattern of change shows you a pretty gradual and persistent level of decline, 16% decline in this index since 1970, and 3% in that last period, the last decade that I talked to you about, the short-term period. And there's no statistical difference when we look at slopes and trends and breakpoints. That sort of statistical analysis tells us actually there is no discernible difference in the slope of decline of biodiversity in those two periods. The population index, we can pull it apart as well to look at major taxa groups. And this graph shows you the vertebrates, that's the top green line there, doing quite well. Plants and lichens sort of in the middle. And the invertebrates again, showing a very strong decline since 1970 within our sample. The question then is about the taxonomic coverage. And you can see within these population indices, where we're demanding a very high level of information, temporal trends of sufficient quality, the animals are quite well represented, overrepresented in this index, as you might expect. The fungi much less so, and the plants quite well represented. So our population index really does have quite high levels of bias within that sample. Of course, there are ways in which you can account for kind of taxonomic coverage within these composite indices. You can upweight the underrepresented species within a particular taxa. You can downweight the overrepresented species within a particular taxa. And this slide shows you some of the consequences of how you might do that, how we have done it in terms of a living planet index for the UK. So the brown line is the index that I showed you before, the overall composite index, where species are weighted equally, as we do in most of the biodiversity indicators in the UK. The other lines show you how consequences of weighting change the pattern. So perhaps the most useful index here is the composite index weighted by phyla. So here we're sort of downweighting the birds because we know the birds are overrepresented in our sample, and we're kind of upweighting the arthropods and the insects that are underrepresented. That suggests a much larger level of decline overall than we get with a simple index that weights things equally. So you can do things, but this is a bit of an inexact science, and it's hard to get the right answer doing this sort of thing. In fact, the Living Planet Index, WWF, published their Living Planet Index with weighting in exactly like this fashion now. And the third measure I talked about was extinction risk. We pulled together for nearly 8,000 species, assessments using modern Red List criteria of extinction risk in Great Britain. And you can see of the species we looked at, around 13% of them are categorised within the threat categories of high risk of extinction. And we can break that down to look at the actual individual taxa groups, the major groups that we have information for. And in this case, it's the plants and the invertebrates and the fungi and the lichens. There's a suggestion here that levels of threat within the plant taxa are higher. And as I've said, there are more red lists being developed and supported. Much of the work supported by Natural England, which is a really great initiative. And it's telling us more about extinction risk and threat of new groups, beetles and birds. I've talked to you about aculeates are being done, I think. So the taxonomic coverage of the red list that we used shows you a medium level of bias as I've assessed it. The animals are quite well represented, the fungi, plants are sort of over-represented, but there is a medium level of bias in terms of the red lists that have been completed to date. Although, as I mentioned, many red lists are in process to be delivered and published quite soon to fill that gap. If we look at that, the taxonomic coverage of the animals within those red lists, you can see actually that there's really quite a good representation of taxa in our sample compared to the species within the UK. There are some groups that are overrepresented and some underrepresented there. There are some real gaps to fill. And if we look at the plants again, the red list for plants are quite dominated by the flowering plants, as you might guess. The mosses are quite well represented, but other more kind of obscure groups, smaller groups are less well represented, so relatively high bias there. So if we stand back and look at the State of Nature report and what it tells us about biodiversity, we can sort of assume, we can kind of assess the state of measures of population change as having quite, medium bias in the case of categorical change, and really quite high bias in terms of the temporal change that we see. And the measures of extinction risk have relatively medium bias in what we know. And this won't surprise anybody in this room, because we know that there are taxonomic biases and there are societal biases in biodiversity data that's available and collected by people and what can be funded, and that's kind of part of what we've talked about. There's a paper here just published, Trudet, who argues strongly for much more representative sampling of the less well-known taxa in order to properly conservation plan on a global scale within the United Kingdom, within the globe, and within national scales. So I'd recommend people having a look at that paper that's just come out. There are other kinds of bias as well, and of course temporal bias. I've talked mainly about taxonomy, but there's temporal bias here. And this slide shows you the breakdown of species groups within the categorical change data that I talked about. So if we look at the 70s compared to the 90s and the 2000s, has the representation of different groups, has that sample changed radically through time? And to some degree it's changed, but it's relatively low bias, I think. I think we can be fairly confident that there's low bias in terms of taxonomy, and that isn't confounding our view of how biodiversity changes through time. The other obvious bias is spatial bias, and I've just taken two examples here, the UK Breeding Bird Survey plots and the bat monitoring plots on the right there, just to show you that, of course, some of the schemes that collect taxa information are kind of free choice, ad hoc collecting, others are within structured frameworks. So there's often, almost always, a degree of spatial bias in the information that needs to be accounted for and considered. In these modern design schemes, for the Breeding Bird Survey, the BTO's Breeding Bird Survey, there's a formal design there. So the sampling is actually stratified by observer density, so that there are more squares in the south of England to take advantage of more volunteers, but the analysis corrects for that. So there is no spatial bias in the trends that the BTO publishes. And the bat monitoring and other monitoring schemes are able to cope more and more with spatial bias in effort and they're correcting in their analytical methods. So overall, if we kind of stand back and look at the representation of species, taxa, within the State of Nature report, you can see across the eukaryote kingdoms here, that the blue boxes are information where we have information to inform our State of Nature report, and the grey bars and boxes are where we lack information. But overall, I'd argue that there's actually really impressive, it's an impressive assembly of information to tell us something in a robust fashion about the state of nature and how it's changing. There are gaps, and we're very keen to improve those gaps, as many of the people and the organisations in this room are. Conclusions, so this is the last couple of slides. In terms of conclusions for the state of nature, well, each of the metrics I've described contains taxonomic and other biases. But all biological data contains biases of different kinds, so that's no great surprise to anybody. I think overall, we think our assessment of the state of nature is relatively robust in its coverage, breadth of coverage, scope of coverage, in terms of how we've assessed biodiversity change and extinction risk within the UK. I think there are obviously new methods coming online, new methods of data analysis and data capture, and they offer great hope to improve biodiversity monitoring in the UK, the accuracy, the precision, the breadth, to reduce bias in lots of different ways going forwards. So I think that is an exciting, positive thing, and we'll hear more about that today, I think, from lots of the other speakers. And there are great initiatives, the Red List initiatives I've talked about, the modern analyses that are going forward, the analyses of occupancy trend data from BRC, for example, analysis of trend information from structured programmes, citizen science programmes, apps, we'll hear about those today. The report tells us, tells me at least I think, there's a strong need to expand and maintain the biological recording we have in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has great monitoring programmes, has a great tradition of it, we should maintain it. And there's a strong need, I think, to maintain and then increase the number of taxa specialists and experts out there in order to inform that information and improve that information through time. So finally, look out for State of Nature Report 2019. State of Nature Partnership is starting to talk about coming together to produce another State of Nature Report in 2019. And finally, I'd like to thank the State of Nature partners, you know, the 50 plus organisations represented in this slide, and the great support we get from the statutory agencies and many of their funding bodies. Thank you.
We do have time for